Shalom and welcome to Rambam Yomi. This is Rabbi Mati Novik. Join me as we learn the Rambam's Mishnah Torah, one perek each day.
Today we'll be continuing Hilchot Shabbat Perek Chavtet, picking up where we left off at the end of the last year. The focus of most of the discussion today will be the laws of Havdalah, and once we finish the perek, we'll address the question of using an electric light as a Havdalah candle, on which to recite the bracha of Borei Morei Ha'esh. This will lead us to a broader discussion of the use of electricity on Shabbat, a topic which came up in earlier shiurim. We begin with Halacha Yud Bet. Mi shaya ochel be'erev Shabbat ve'kadash alav hayom, v'hu betoch ha'suda, poreis mapa al ha'shulchan u'mekadesh, ve'gomer sudato, v'achar kach mevarech birkat ha'mazon. Haya ochel be'Shabbat, v'yatza Shabbat v'hu betoch sudato, gomer sudato, v'notel yadav, u'mevarech birkat ha'mazon al ha'kos. We'll see in the next perek that in general one should not eat a bread meal in the hours before Shabbat on Friday afternoon. Nonetheless, if one does this and the meal continues into Shabbat, and he wishes for it to count as his nighttime Shabbat meal, he is poreis mapa u'mekadesh. He lays down a new tablecloth to indicate that the nature of the meal is changing, then he makes kiddush and continues meal until it ends, when he says birkat mazon. If on Shabbat one's Seudah Shlishit extends until the end of Shabbat, he may continue the meal as long as he wishes, and when it ends, he may say Birkat HaMazon on a cup of wine, and he proceeds to make Havdalah on the same cup. Halacha Yud Gimel. Haya ochel v'gomer achilato im achnasat Shabbat, mevarech Birkat HaMazon tchila, v'achar kach mekadesh al kos sheni, v'lo yivarech v'yikadesh al kos echad, she'ein osin shtei mitzvot b'kos echad. Shemitzvat kiddush umitzvat birkat mazon shtei mitzvot shel Torah hein. Going back to the case of the Friday afternoon meal, if he finishes this meal just as Shabbat begins, he says birkat mazon, and afterward says kiddush in advance of his Shabbat evening meal. These two brachot, birkat mazon and kiddush, must be said on separate cups of wine because they are two separate mitzvot. The phrase used in the Gemara for this idea is ein osin mitzvot chavilot chavilot. There seems to be an outright contradiction between this halacha and the last one. Why is it that one may make Birkat HaMazon and Havdalah on one cup of wine, as we learned in Halacha Yud Bet, but not Birkat HaMazon and Kiddush? The Rambam mentions at the end of Halacha Yud Gimel that Birkat HaMazon and Kiddush are shtei mitzvot shel Torah, two mitzvot d'oraita, but this is also true of Birkat HaMazon and Havdalah, as we saw in the beginning of this perek that the Rambam considers Havdalah to be mid'oraita. So why does Ein Osin Mitzvot Chavilot Chavilot apply in the second case of Kiddush and Birkat HaMazon, but not in the first of Havdalah and Birkat HaMazon? The Raivin implicitly asks this question when he comments here that Birkat HaMazon and Havdalah may be said on one cup of wine only if there is no other cup available. The Magen Mishnah suggests that Birkat HaMazon relates to the past, the meal just ending, and Kiddush relates to the future, the day of Shabbat just beginning, so these can't be said on the same cup. But Havdalah also relates to the past, the day of Shabbat, which is ending, like Birkat HaMazon. And so saying these together on one cup does not pose a problem of Ein Osin Mitzvot Chavilot Chavilot. We can suggest another answer based on a novel idea developed by Rav Soloveitchik in a Yahrzeit shiur about the nature of Havdalah. One may ask, what exactly is the purpose of Havdalah al Hakos? In order to perform malacha, it suffices to say the paragraph of Atachon Antanu in Mariv of Motzei Shabbat, as we saw in Halacha Vav. The main activity one may not do at all until after Havdalah al Hakos is eating and drinking. In fact, there is an opinion in the Gemara in Masechet Psachim that one who eats before Havdalah may not say Havdalah at all. This is explicitly rejected by the Rambam back in Halacha Hey, and in the last year we commented on how strange it seemed that he emphasized this point. Rav Soloveitchik explains that whereas the purpose of Havdalah in Tefillah, the paragraph of Atachon Antanu, is to end the sanctity of Shabbat with regard to Malacha, the purpose of Havdalah al Hakos is to end the nature of our eating and drinking as having the character of Shabbat meals and representing manifestations of Kavod Shabbat and Oneg Shabbat, which we'll learn about in Perek Lamed. This extends even to Yom Kippur, despite the lack of meals on that day, because Yom Kippur too has a mitzvah of Kavod, which manifests itself in the special clothing we wear, like on other Yomim Tovim. This explains why one may not eat and drink after Shabbat, once he has completed his Shabbat meals, before making Havdalah, as Havdalah is meant to mark the boundary between the elevated character of Shabbat eating and the mundane character of weekday eating. It also explains the opinion in the Gemara that one who eats before Havdalah loses the opportunity to establish this boundary through the mechanism of Havdalah ala kos, as he has already begun his weekday eating. Bringing this back to the discrepancy in the Rambam between Halacha Yud Bet and Halacha Yud Gimel, if we understand that Ein Osin Mitzvot Chavilot Chavilot poses a problem whenever one combines two fundamentally different mitzvot into one common framework, like a single kosher bracha, then it makes sense that this applies to Birkat HaMazon and Kiddush, as these two mitzvot have nothing to do with each other. On the other hand, combining Havdalah with Birkat Mazon on a Shabbat meal, which continues into the night, does not represent a violation of Ein Osin Mitzvot Chavilot Chavilot. Just the opposite. Both of these brachot relate specifically to the meal that just ended. One, thanking Hashem for the food, and the other, demarcating the end of the meal as the boundary between Oneg Shabbat and a return to mundane physical sustenance of the other 6 days of the week. We continue with Halacha Yud Dalet. Ein mekadshin ela al hayayin haraui lenasech al gabei hamizbeach. Lefichach, im nitarev bo dvash o saor, afilu kitipat chardal bechavit gedola, ein mekadshin alav. Vekach anu morin bechol ma'arav. Viesh mishe matir lekadesh alav. Veomer, lo ne'emar hayayin haraui legabei hamizbeach, ela lehutzi yayin sheirecho ra, o megule, o mevushal. She'ein mekadshin al echad mehen. The Gemara in Masechet Bava Batra says that one may only use for Kiddush wine which is acceptable for use on the Mizbeach, in the context of Nisachim, pouring libations of wine which accompany a korban. The Rambam brings here two opinions about what that means. The first is much more stringent, and disqualifies for Kiddush any wine with even a small amount of honey or sugar added, as this may not be poured on the Mizbeach, based on the pasuk in Parshat Vayikra of Ki chol se'or v'chol devash, lo taktiru mimenu ishe l'ashem. The Rambam identifies this first view as his own opinion, and that which is accepted in the Ma'arav, meaning the regions of North Africa and possibly Spain. The second, more lenient opinion, understands that the criterion of acceptable for pouring on the Mizbeach is not meant to be taken literally as a complete equation between these two areas of halacha, but rather means that wine for Kiddush must be of superior quality, just like wine poured on the Mizbeach. This does not exclude wine containing any sweetener, which can still be wine of high quality, but rather wine which has a bad odor, or which was left open where a poisonous snake may have injected venom into it, or cooked wine, which in general is considered to be of inferior quality. Even the more lenient opinion quoted by the Rambam is more stringent than that of most Rishonim, who believe that cooked wine is entirely acceptable for use in Kiddush. This is the psak of the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama as well. Nowadays, of course, most kosher wine is cooked to avoid problems of stam yenam when non-Jews handle the bottles. And so the lenient psak of the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama removes a significant burden imposed by both opinions brought in the Rambam. Halacha Tetvav, Yayin shetamo tam chometz, afa pishrei cho reach yayin, ein mekadshin alav, v'chein shmarim shnatan alehem mayim, afa pishyesh behen tam yayin, ein mekadshin alehen. B'med varim amurim, b'shenatan al hashmarim shlosha mayim, v'hotzi pachot me'arba'a, aval im hotzi arba'a, hareze yayin mazug u'mekadshin alav. Wine which smells like wine but tastes like vinegar may not be used for Kiddush, as we follow taste rather than smell. If water is poured on wine sediment, and the wine which comes out of the sediment increases the volume of the water from 3 units to 4, that is, the wine is 1/4 of the entire mixture at least, then this may be used for Kiddush. Is it indeed the case that a mixture consisting of 1/4 wine and 3/4 water may be used for Kiddush? The Shulchan Aruch rules that this was only true in earlier times, when the custom was to drink wine diluted in this manner. Poskim conclude that in order for wine nowadays to be valid for Kiddush according to the Shulchan Aruch, it must be more than 50% actual wine, and less than half water. And products sold for use as Kiddush wine typically meet this condition. The Rama is more lenient and allows using even more diluted wine if it is typically consumed as wine by most people. There is a debate among more recent poskim about the use of reconstituted grape juice, that is, grape juice concentrate mixed with water, in a ratio of about one part concentrate to four parts water. According to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, once grape juice concentrate has been separated and cooked to prevent it from fermenting, it can no longer retain its status as wine if it is combined with water, precisely because it is no longer capable of fermenting. Rav Yisrael Belsky of the OU disagreed with this opinion and held that because the reconstituted grape juice looks and tastes exactly like regular grape juice, it may be used for Kiddush. Halacha Tet Zayin. Kli shaya male yayin, afilu machzik kama rivi'iyot, im shata mimenu ma'at, hareze pigamo, v'nifsal, ve'ein mekadshin ala sha'ar, mipnei shehu kishiurei kosot. A vessel which is full of wine, whether a cup or pitcher, becomes pagum, defective, if someone drinks from it, and one may not use the remaining wine in the kli for kiddush, as it is not considered respectable to make kiddush on the remnants which remain in a cup after one finishes drinking. The Shulchan Aruch rules that a cup or bottle which is pagum can be rehabilitated to be usable for Kiddush again by adding some wine to it from a cup or bottle which is not pagum. Halacha Yud Zayin. Yain she'recho reach ha'chometz v'tamo tam yain mikachin alav, v'chein yain mazug, v'yein simukim mikachin alav, v'hu shiyu simukim shiyesh behen lachluchit, shi'im yidroch otam yetze mehen divshan, וכן יין חדש מגיתו מקדשין עליו, וסוחט אדם אשכול של ענבים ומקדש עליו בשעתו. מדינה שרוב יינה שיכר, אף על פי שהוא פסול לקידוש, מותר להבדיל עליו, הועיל והוא חמר המדינה. Wine which tastes like wine, but smells like vinegar, is valid for kiddush, as we follow taste rather than smell, as we saw also in the reverse case in Halacha Tet Vav. Kiddush may be made on raisin wine, as well as on wine which has not fermented, including pure grape juice. One may even squeeze a cluster of grapes straight into a cup and make kiddush over that. Even though beer and drinks made from fruit other than grapes, or raisins, may not be used for kiddush, this type of beverage, known as chamar medina, may be used for havdalah. What qualifies as chamar medina? The Shulchan Aruch has a very broad definition, encompassing any common beverage other than water. Rav Avad Yosef felt that only an alcoholic beverage can qualify as chamar medina for use in Havdalah. But Rav Moshe Feinstein accepted the criterion that any beverage which a person drinks even when he isn't particularly thirsty is considered chamar medina. He therefore felt that in the absence of any alcoholic beverage, one may make Havdalah on coffee or tea. The next several halachot are about Kiddush and Havdalah on Yom Tov, which we discussed earlier in the perek. And so we continue with halacha chaf bet. כיצד מברכים בלילי יום טוב שחל להיות באחד בשבת, בתחילה מברך על הגפן, ואחר כך מקדש קידוש יום טוב, ואחר כך מברך על הנר, ואחר כך מבדיל וחותם בהבדלה המבדיל בין קודש לקודש, ואחר כך מברך שחיינו. We'll see shortly the order of brachot in the usual Havdalah on Motzei Shabbat. But the Rambam tells us first the order of brachot when Motzei Shabbat is a Yom Tov, and so the Havdalah of Shabbat must be combined with Kiddush of Yom Tov. In this case, the first bracha is Hagafen, followed by Kiddush of Yom Tov, then the bracha on the candle, then the bracha of Havdalah, in which one says Hamavdil ben Kodesh leKodesh, and finally Shechianu. We mentioned earlier that Kiddush on the first night of Yom Tov is always accompanied by Shechianu. The Gemara Masechet Pesachim uses the acronym Yak Nahaz to denote this arrangement. Yayin, Kiddush, Ner, Havdalah, and finally Zman, referring to Shechianu. Halacha Chaf Dalid. Seder Havdalah b'motzei Shabbat shivarech al hayayin, v'acharkach al habesamim, v'acharkach al haner, v'chitzad mevarech al haner, borei morei ha'esh, v'acharkach mavdil. The order of brachot in Havdalah of a typical Motzei Shabbat is Bori Pri HaGefen on the wine, then a bracha of Besamim. Ashkenazim typically say Bori Mene Besamim in all cases, but we saw in Hilchot Brachot Perek Tet that there are several possible brachot one can make on Besamim. After that, Bori Maori HaEsh is recited on a candle, and last comes the bracha of Havdalah itself, the full text of which appears back in Halacha Gimel. The reason for the besamim, the Rambam explains in the very last halacha of this perek, is in order to restore strength to the soul, which is unhappy and feels unsettled when Shabbat ends. Halacha chaf hei, ein varchin al haner ad shi'otu le'oro, kidei shi'akir ben matbea medina zo, the matbea medina acheret, ve'ein mevarchin al haner shel goyim, shestam misibatan lavodah zarah, ve'ein mevarchin lo al haner shel avodah zarah, ve'lo al haner shel metim. In order to make a bracha of Bori Mori Ha'esh on the candle, one must first get some benefit from its light, like to use it to distinguish between coins used in different cities or countries. The Shulchan Aruch brings the common custom to use the light of the candle to illuminate one's palms and fingernails, and the Rama adds that the fingers should be bent into the palms, so that both the nails and the palms can be illuminated together by the light of the flame. One should not make the bracha on a candle belonging to Goyim, as this is assumed to have been lit in honor of some Avodah Zarah, and therefore is Asur Bahana. Another condition is that the candle be lit for the purpose of providing light, unlike a candle lit next to a grave, which is meant solely to show honor to the deceased. The next halacha lists more examples of disqualified flames, like that of a furnace or oven, which is meant for heat and not to provide light. A candle lit in a Beit Midrash or a Beit Knesset may only be used for Havdalah if it is meant to provide light for someone inside, not if it is kept going only as a Ner Tamid or the like. Lit coals may be used for Havdalah only if a thin stick of wood placed on them would catch fire. It is considered ideal to make the bracha on an avukah, a bundle of wicks lit together. The custom is to use for Havdalah a special candle consisting of two or more wicks. Halacha Chaf Vav ends with the important point that the flame is not a critical part of Havdalah, which one must have in order for the Havdalah to be valid. Rather, it is meant to accompany the Havdalah if there is one available. And if there isn't, then the rest of Havdalah is made without it, and one can make the bracha on the candle when one has access to it later on. Halacha Chaf Zayin. Ur shehudlak b'shabbat l'cholev u'lechaya, mevarchin alav b'motzei Shabbat. Ur shehugdach min ha'itzim u'min ha'avanim, mevarchin alav b'motzei Shabbat. Shehi ha'ita tchilat b'riyato b'idei Adam. Aval ein mevarchin alav b'motzei Yom HaKippurim. She'ein mevarchin b'motzei Yom HaKippurim, ela al ur sheshabbat. אף על פי שהודלק לחולה או לחיה ביום הכיפורים, מברכין עליו שערי שבת מעבירה. The Rambam says in the halacha after this one, halacha chaf chet, that Havdalah at the end of Yom Tov, which falls during the week, consists only of the brachot of Bor Pri HaGefen and the Havdalah itself, without besamim or a candle. In our halacha, the Rambam explains that Yom Kippur is different, and the Havdalah after Yom Kippur includes the bracha of Borei Ma'ori Ha'esh, though not the bracha on Besamim. However, the reasons for this bracha on Motzei Shabbat and Motzei Yom Kippur are entirely different. On Motzei Shabbat, we commemorate the creation of fire by Adam HaRishon, which took place on the first Motzei Shabbat. This fire, therefore, can come from any source, and can be ignited from wood or rocks on Motzei Shabbat itself. But the Borei Ma'ori Ha'esh at the end of Yom Kippur, which of course need not coincide with Motzei Shabbat, is for another reason altogether. During Yom Kippur, unlike other Yomim Tovim, we may not use a flame, because cooking is forbidden. So on Motzei Yom Kippur, we make a bracha on a flame, to indicate that this flame, which had been off-limits through all of Yom Kippur, is now again permitted for use. But this means that the flame on which we make the bracha must have been in existence throughout Yom Kippur, and not created from wood or sticks or a match just now on Motzei Yom Kippur. The halachic term for this is Ur Sheshavat, or a Ner Sheshavat, a flame which rested over Yom Kippur. This excludes a flame lit by a non-Jew over Yom Kippur, or one lit by a Jew in violation of the Isur Melacha of Yom Kippur. However, a flame lit on Yom Kippur by a Jew in permitted circumstances, like for a sick patient or for a woman who recently gave birth, is considered a Ner Sheshavat and may be used for Havdalah on Motzei Yom Kippur. The Shulchan Aruch adds that any flame lit from a Ner Sheshavat may be used as well. The general custom nowadays is to leave a yahrzeit candle lit over Yom Kippur. This custom has other reasons as well, related to the nature of Yom Kippur, and this candle is thus a Ner Sheshavat, which can be used for Havdalah. As we quoted from the Shulchan Aruch, any candle lit from it after Yom Kippur ends is also a Ner Sheshavat and may be used for Havdalah. Poskim of the last century or so have dealt with the question of using an electric light for Havdalah. We discussed in an earlier shiur the issue of electric lights as Neirot Shabbat, but there is a major difference between these applications. For Neirot Shabbat, we require illumination, which allows people in the house to see where they are going, in order to maintain Oneg Shabbat. But in Havdalah, we make the bracha of Borei Ma'ori Ha'esh, which can only be made on something defined halachically as fire. Does an electric light qualify as fire? This question clearly has ramifications outside the limited realm of Havdalah. If an electric light is considered a fire, then certainly turning one on or off during Shabbat should be a melacha d'oraita of mavir or mechabeh, respectively. Many poskim consider an incandescent bulb, in which electricity heats a metal filament which glows and becomes very hot, to be the equivalent of fire. This was the opinion of the Chazon Ish and of the great pre-war Lithuanian posek and dayan Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski. Rav Chaim Ozer would specifically make a point of making Havdalah on an incandescent bulb in order to publicize his view that this was halachically fire and therefore forbidden midoraita to use on Shabbat. We should emphasize that even those who dispute the use of an electric bulb for Havdalah may agree that lighting one is an act of mavir. Recall that the Rambam in Perek Yud Bet Halacha Aleph included heating metal to a high temperature as a tolda of mavir, even though heated metal, which doesn't glow, is certainly not a fire. Both Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank and, more recently, Rav Avad Yosef felt that one may not use an electric light for Havdalah because the light is not similar to a fire in that it cannot exist on its own without an electric circuit and a glass casing. This entire discussion has related to incandescent bulbs, which in recent years have fallen into disuse in favor of LED bulbs. These certainly cannot be used for Havdalah, as they produce light not through heat, but through stimulating semiconductors to release energy in the form of photons. This is not the equivalent of fire at all, nor is a fluorescent bulb, in which light is produced by causing gases in the bulb to release energy, which is then converted to visible light. So at least for now, as incandescent bulbs exit the scene, so does the possibility of using an electric light for Havdalah. We move to the question of using electricity on Shabbat in general, outside the specific context of light bulbs. This has been the subject of much controversy since the beginning of commercial electric technology in the late 19th century, and the question has only become more urgent since then, as electricity has come to pervade our lives in ever more and diverse ways. The question was first addressed by the great Galician posek of the mid and late 19th century, Rav Yehuda Shmelkis, in his Shut Beit Yitzchak. There is a Gemara in Masechet Beitza which forbids using incense on Shabbat to impart a scent or fragrance into some other object, like food or clothing, because this constitutes an Isser Drabanan of molid, creating something new on Shabbat, even without performing any malacha. The Beit Yitzchak felt that any use of electricity on Shabbat represents a violation of molid, as it generates a new force where it was previously absent. This, of course, means that using electricity on Shabbat is asur midrabanan, though we emphasize that using electricity in order to perform a malacha, like the earlier example of lighting an incandescent bulb, which most posts can consider to be mavir, or activating an electric oven, which then cooks the food inside it, is asur midoraita like any other performance of a genuine malacha. The Chazon Ish, in a novel approach, felt that using electricity in any form constitutes a melacha d'oraita of bone, in that it creates a circuit through which electrons can flow. The Tzitz Eliezer suggested that because an electrically powered object is useless until it is activated, turning it on represents a Torah violation of makeh bepatish, creating a kli by making it functional. However, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach wrote a very thorough rebuttal of all of these views in his Shut Minchat Shlomo. He posits that both bone and makeh bepatish are entirely inapplicable here, because an electric appliance is meant to be constantly turned on and off. Opening and closing a door to a house is not an act of bone, and buttoning a piece of clothing is not an act of makeh bepatish, even though it allows the clothing to be worn, because these represent the normal use of the object involved, and do not produce in that object any lasting change. The same is true of turning an electric appliance on and off. As for the problem of molid suggested by the Beit Yitzchak, Rav Shlomo Zalman points out that this isser appears in a very limited number of contexts in the halachic literature, and there is not enough evidence to extrapolate from these examples that anything which we perceive as producing something new is asur midrabanan based on molid. Rav Shlomo Zalman's conclusion is unclear. He writes, Kvar horeh zaken, the sage has already ruled on the matter, seeming to accept, in practice, that using electricity is forbidden on Shabbat, even as he is unable to find a firm basis for this conclusion. Whatever the reasoning involved, the consensus among poskim is that it is inconceivable that electricity may be permitted on Shabbat on a wide scale. Rosh Shlomo Zalman points out that this would lead to wholesale Chilul Shabbat, as many people cannot distinguish between electric appliances which perform malacha, like the incandescent bulb and the oven, among many others, and those which do not. As more aspects of our lives are electrified with every new technological development, the entire character of Shabbat, as distinct from the rest of the week, is severely endangered if the use of electricity were to be broadly permitted. Poskim of recent years, including Rav Nachum Rabinovich, Zichrono Levracha, and Yibad Lechaim Tovim Rav Yaakov Ariel, have taken different approaches to this topic, which acknowledge the difficulty of categorically forbidding the use of electricity within the confines of Malachot and their accompanying Isurim Derabbanan. Rav Rabinovich considered the prohibition against using electricity to be rooted in the category of Uvdin Dechol, weekday-type activity which should be avoided on Shabbat. Therefore, specific applications need to be examined individually, as there may be room to distinguish between them. An important factor is whether the application involves a concrete act of pushing a button or turning a switch, or if the harnessing of electricity is done through a routine movement. Rav Rabinovich saw no problem with activating sensors or causing electric doors to open just by moving close to them, and he even permitted the use of electric key cards on Shabbat. Rav Ariel believes that ultimately, the problem with the use of electricity on Shabbat is its widespread use, as this undermines the character of Shabbat. This is based on the Ramban al Torah we've mentioned before about Shabbaton, where the Ramban suggests that spending Shabbat involved in commerce or moving rocks around the house represents a Torah violation of Shabbaton, the requirement that Shabbat represent a day of rest with a different atmosphere and character from the other days of the week. Using electricity in a widespread manner would pose the same problem nowadays, and therefore is a Torah violation of Shabbaton. But using it once or very sporadically may be usur midrabanan, in the same way that transacting or moving a rock just once on Shabbat is usur midrabanan, based on daber davar and muktzah respectively. While some are machmir nowadays to treat any use of electricity as a melacha doraita, or at least potentially so, the more common view is to see it as asur midrabanan when it doesn't lead to the performance of a malacha. This leads to leniencies in cases of need, like the use of an electric hearing aid, or asking a non-Jew under pressing circumstances to activate an electric appliance.
Thank you for joining me in learning today's parak of the Mishnah Torah. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas you'd like to share, I'd be happy to hear from you. Send me an email at mtorahyomi@gmail.com. That's M as in Mishnah, Torah, T-O-R-A-H, Yomi, Y-O-M-I, @gmail.com. Come back tomorrow as we continue with our next parak.